Woof, Woof, Woof by Eilish Nigwevna. My sister Pauline and I came to Tenerife on Saturday for a winter break. It was to be my treat, but Pauline wouldn't hear of it, so we went Dutch, which spoiled it a bit for me. I oh so wanted to foot that bill. But I have to say her pleasure in the whole thing made up a little for my initial disappointment. She was like a child at the airport, excited in a way I haven't been since I was about 20. "Where do we go now?" she asked when we checked in, and she couldn't hide the joy in her voice. It nearly made me cry to think that she didn't know the way to the departure gates, a walk I make about 30 times a year. "I lead the way," I said kindly, pushing out the trolley, relieved to note that her bags appeared presentable, and she herself looked as well as most of those in the queue, all things considered, like her smoker's complexion and her 14 stone of flab. It's hard to believe that Pauline used to be much better looking than me. We're twins, not identical, me and Pauline. From our earliest days, she was the lovely, bossy one, while I was mousy and humble. Appropriately enough, really, as we were born in Walkinstown, in a house about the size of a comfortable mousehole. The street was called Mozart Road, which sounds beautiful, but unfortunately most of the residents wouldn't have known Mozart from Elvis Presley. We had one of those quaint working-class childhoods people are always writing about. Fly-infested corner shops, lukewarm baths once a week, big sloppy-looking clothes. Inside the house, in the world of adults, life was stereotypically drab and not very harmonious. But outside, out playing was another story. That was a wondrous kingdom of hula hoops whirring, skipping ropes twirling, balls bouncing with all the rhythm and energy of a great symphony. The children's Mozart Road was Music Street, with Pauline busily conducting the show. We played and sang all day long, skipping rhymes, ball rhymes, counting out rhymes, in and out goes Mary Bluebell, Plainy Packet or Vinso, and my favourite, "Vote, vote, vote for De Valera. In comes Pauline at the door, I-O. Pauline is the one who can have a bit of fun, and we don't want Barney anymore, I-O." I heard some kids singing that rhyme a few years ago in a park in Clondalkin. "Woof, woof, woof for De Valera" is what they sang. The rhyme had endured, but not its meaning. Amazing. Pauline was clever and ambitious as well as being a bully. When we were 17, she decided we were going to university. It wasn't quite the October Revolution of Mozart Road. History had destined us to be that generation, you know, the first in the family to go to university or even secondary school. Presumably there has to be a first, why the big deal? But insisting that we go to Trinity was a definite coup, a sign of Pauline's ambition and power. Some Mozart Road kids went to Belfield, but we went to Trinity. Pauline loves Brideshead Revisited, and it was the closest we'd ever get to Oxford. Her ambition was great, but it had its bounds. College Green. "We're going everywhere," she boasted, trying to compensate for the fact that we weren't going to make it to Lady Margaret Hall. "Rome, Paris, Trieste." She'd read Joyce too. I believed it. Going to Trinity was a leap so major that after that everything was going to seem like simple addition. And in a way, for me, it has all worked out. I never travelled in the sense we had intended to. You see, I met Connor in second year and we got married 3 years later, and that sort of put pay to the bohemian wanderlust bit, since he decided to make his career here. But I've been on about 1,000 holidays. It's not quite the life I once envisaged, but it's better than poor Pauline's fate. She was doing fine at college at first. We did English and Spanish, Spanish being the language they always taught in poor schools, God knows why, maybe because a lot of poor people speak it. Trinity made a big impression on us, and although we made none whatsoever on Trinity, we were happy enough there. At the end of first year, we got good marks, but nothing spectacular enough to attract any attention. And although Pauline loved to talk about books, she didn't, not in tutorials, because the tutors had difficulty understanding her Dublin accent, and weren't very tactful about keeping that problem to themselves. After one of them had asked her to repeat a Hiberno-English phrase she'd used in class, she'd said, "I'm after saying that already." She kept quiet. Hiberno-English. Everyone stared at her as if she'd strayed off a cabbage patch on an Abbey set. In second year, we drifted apart and made a few friends independently. I met Connor, and apparently Pauline met someone too, because by Christmas she was pregnant. And basically, that's the story of her life. "I want to have an abortion," she said, when she told me her terrible secret. The word stunned me, even more than the horrifying word pregnant. I'd never heard her say it. I knew vaguely of girls who'd had abortions, Trinity girls. But those girls were always nameless and at a distance which made them impossible to access. Friends of friends. Sometimes I wonder if they were mythical creatures. They were certainly as elusive as dryads or mermaids. You heard about them, but you never actually saw one, much less talked to one or asked her for advice. We had no one to turn to. There was a family planning clinic in Dublin then, to which people went for contraceptives, which were still illegal. So in desperation we sneaked off to that, looking over our shoulders in case anyone we knew would see us. The clinic was located in a quiet back street in a basement. We slunk down damp area steps into the den of vice, which turned out to be rather fresh and pretty, like a country-look coffee shop, pale green with flowery posters on the wall. The staff all seemed to be English, or to have accents that sounded English, a bit like Trinity really, so we weren't as fazed as we might have been. They were very slow to give Pauline information about abortion. They tried everything else. Get married, consider adoption, keep the baby. All impossible. She didn't want to marry the father, and very vice versa. If she went through with the pregnancy, she'd miss her exams and wouldn't get her grant next year. And keeping the baby, where would she keep it? On what? Nobody did that then. Nobody would talk to her if she did. She'd be a leper. In the end, reluctantly, they gave her a telephone number in London. Even phoning London was a huge undertaking. We didn't have a phone at home and couldn't have used it if we'd had. So we went to the GPO, into one of those brown boxes with the swing doors. My pockets were full of tenpenny pieces. We had to go through an operator, and we were terrified that someone would answer, "Illegal abortion clinic, can I help you?" and that everyone in the telephone exchange would know what we were up to. But the clinic receptionist was a model of discretion. And she informed Pauline, discreetly, that the cost of the procedure plus a night in the clinic would be £300. £300? And travel on top of that? It might as well have been £3 million. Our fees were less than £100. Our maintenance grant for the year was £150, and our mother got that. We had no money. Pauline had no friends with money. We'd never gone to England, never booked a ticket on the ferry, never stayed in a hotel or even a B&B. It was all too much. We capitulated. "I'll get back to college. I bloody well will," Pauline gritted her teeth. "As soon as the little bugger is adopted, I'll be back there finishing my degree." Just how she planned to do this was unclear, because she missed the exams and so lost her grant. One of the agencies for unmarried mothers was very helpful, though, and when she agreed to adoption, they organised everything. Home, hospital, adoption. But the plan, oh, so misfired. When she had the baby at one of those homes, it had mild Down syndrome. So the couple who had it earmarked backed off, and nobody else wanted it. Pauline could have left the baby, Sebastian, in the home, but she refused to do that, because she hated institutions. Also, she pitied Sebastian. She pitied him much more than she pitied herself. "I wouldn't have let them adopt him anyway, even if they'd wanted to, after I'd had him," she said defiantly. She probably believes this, but I don't. Giving him up for adoption would have been like cutting off my arm and giving it to someone who hadn't got an arm of their own. Do you know what I mean? She rented a bedsit in a run-down house in Inchicore, pretending she didn't have a baby. She used to leave Sebastian in with a woman while she went to work, and I babysat a good bit for her during the first year or two. Later, Sebastian went to a daycare centre, which looks after him for most of the day. He's old now, but he still lives with Pauline. Her main worry is what will happen to him if anything happens to her, i.e. when she dies. She goes on and on about it, whines actually, you know, about the lack of state services and backup. Sure, it's true, but what can you do? She's done all she can. He probably won't end up on the street. She should just let it go. And Tenerife seems to have helped. This is the life, she says. She's more relaxed now than I've seen her for years, not that I see her very often, since we move in such different circles. We're sitting on our balcony, drinking red wine. She smokes like a chimney, drinks like a fish. Who could blame her? But maybe that's the root of her weight problem. Yes, it is, isn't it, I say. Do you ever wish you'd had the money for that abortion, I ask then. I'm happy with my tan. It's a good, even brown already at the end of 3 days, and I've drunk, I'd say, a bottle of wine already. You know how you can do if you get started. I'll pay for that next week. We'd never discuss the abortion thing, not for about 30 years. I don't know why I'm raising the subject now. She doesn't answer. She just smiles, and then she sings. Woof, 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 a devilera, in comes Bernie at the door, I-O. Bernie is the one who can have a bit of fun, and we don't want Pauline anymore, I-O. I'm amazed. I didn't know anybody else knew that version apart from me, but there you are. You think something is your own little secret, and then you find out it's common knowledge. I join in the song with her. Woof, 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 I sing. And then I start giggling, and she starts giggling, and we both nearly split our sides. We're like two kids, rolling around the floor, tickling each other. When Pauline told me she was pregnant that time, I was preoccupied. I was deeply in love with Connor. Drunk on love, the way you can be when you're 19. I considered fleetingly asking him for a loan for Pauline. His father was a bank manager. They seemed rich enough to me. But I'd just been with him for a few weeks. He didn't even know I had a sister. How do you ask the fella you've just started going with for £300 so your sister can have an abortion? Connor was a lapsed Catholic like me, but I didn't know how far he'd lapsed at that point. You know what I mean? It was a big deal for him, dating a girl from Walkingstown. He believed he was storming the Bastille when he asked me to go to the pictures. He lived in a huge big house in Rathfarnham, where we live now, in the same house, incidentally. We inherited it 2 years ago, when his mother finally kicked the bucket. So, I didn't risk it.